stop the signal.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 4 of The Signal. I'm going to create this episode based on many, many DMs and tweets and emails that I've received over the course of the last month or two after I had offered my help, I suppose, to anyone who was interested in getting into Bitcoin. And I found that many of you were asking the same questions in my DMs and on Twitter, and which is great. And it makes it very easy for me to understand what the big questions are for people who are interested in getting into Bitcoin. And my goal is to have an episode here that we can use as reference, or I can use as reference to say, hey, go listen to this episode. And it'll help you get started if you are in a place where you want to get started in Bitcoin. So the way that I want to lay this out is the first half is going to be a little bit of an overview. It's going to be a kind of a why of Bitcoin. And a why of Bitcoin only, and a why of the value of holding or hodling at least a portion of your Bitcoin. And then the second half is going to be nuts and bolts. It's going to be how do you actually get started physically into Bitcoin. So hopefully at the end of this, you'll come away with at least a better understanding of what this whole thing is, and a better understanding of how to get started. And you can come back and you can reference it and go listen to various parts if you're trying to jog your memory on what exactly to do at a certain step. So I want to start this off with the introduction, the basics, and that's just what is Bitcoin. And Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer network that, you know, just like, you know, if you remember BitTorrent, which is obviously still around. But it is meant to support a peer-to-peer cache on top of it. This and therefore, with the goal of becoming global money. Bitcoiners tend to be, and the more and more that you understand about the technical hurdles of doing something accomplishing something like this. Bitcoiners, the more hardcore, or the more you learn about the technical aspects of this, tend to be more and more Bitcoin only. And that also goes hand in hand with a goal that many, many hardcore Bitcoiners have, particularly in the early days, and many people listening to this have, even if you are not in Bitcoin yet, and that is the separation of money and state. I became a libertarian through Ron Paul in the 2007-2008 days. And in those days, the solution to everything was end the Fed. It seemed overly simplistic, but at the same time, it was true in a lot of ways. At that time, it was understood widely in the libertarian movement. If you can end the evils of central banking, you can knock out a huge chunk of the ills of society as we see them. And I think to some degree, a lot of that's been lost. And maybe people from that era tend to overlook it because in those days, you know, you ask anybody, hey, what do you do about this? What do you do about this? What do you do about this? The answer was end the Fed. It was end the Fed. And it would just be a simple tracing back to, oh, okay, well, that's created by central banking and seniorage and the Cantillon effect or whatever it may be, of basically central banking screwing with markets at the source. But what Bitcoin has done is it's brought a return to that, and a return with what I believe is a viable solution. So in those days, we wanted a return to gold. And a gold standard would no doubt be better than where we're at now, but it is not the ultimate solution because we already know that it where it goes. We already know that it has technical flaws that allow it to be exploited. Finally, Bitcoin has come and it has hopefully, and I believe, shorn up those flaws. It has created a truly all-in-one global money because of its various properties. One of those properties, and the one that makes Bitcoin, I think there are probably two that make Bitcoin very, very desirable for us. One is that it has a supply cap. In other words, it is inflationless. Now, there is a supply issuance schedule, but there will never be any more than 21 million Bitcoins in existence. So in some sense, there is no inflation, even though we are still in the midst of that issuance schedule. The other is the security of the Bitcoin network. And that is a function of, well, a number of things, but primarily mining. And that's the means of confirming transactions that are happening on the network into the what we hope is an immutable, uncensorable ledger. And that's the recordation of every transaction that's ever happened on the Bitcoin network. I'm going to keep things pretty high level on this episode, just because I want it to be a primer and I want it to be a way to get started in Bitcoin. So I'm not going to go super into that, but the number of miners, the amount of mining that's occurring on the Bitcoin network serves to offer security both to the transactions that have already occurred to keep them from being reversed and also to defend, well, mining in conjunction with individuals running fully validating nodes. It serves to defend the consensus rules of the network. And that's the rules that we all agree to when we run the Bitcoin network. For instance, the 21 million Bitcoin cap. There are a number of other, a 10-minute block time, and so on and so forth, difficulty adjustments and things that we don't need to necessarily cover right now. But this security is something that makes Bitcoin stand apart from all altcoins right now. It is the most secure cryptocurrency. It's not even close. And in a sense, every single altcoin that exists right now exists because it's allowed to exist. They all have a laughable amount of security that basically most of them, a hobbyist could probably interfere with their network if they were so inclined. I believe at time of writing, Bitcoin has something like 120 to 150 times the security of the next closest coin on the market cap charts. So when you're looking at Bitcoin versus other cryptocurrencies, I wouldn't want to save the excess value from my labor in something that only exists because people are allowing it to exist. I want to save in something that exists because it says fuck you. It exists because we all believe in this project, and the game theory that is embedded in Bitcoin encourages people to continue to join and to continue to help secure the network in various ways. I do not see that from any other altcoin at this time. And again, even if they have some allure, you know, because of some feature, whether it be faster transactions or cheaper fees or, any number of things, at the end of the day, if they started to do something that was truly dangerous to the state would take them down. And so they exist because they're allowed to exist. There are a few that may have like niche uses. One that we've talked about on Timeline Earth, for example, is Monero. It's incredibly private. We recently mentioned that the IRS had issued a reward for any of their preferred contractors that could successfully trace Monero transactions. It was a $625,000 reward. I'll note that what's interesting about this reward is that the IRS issued it and it included both Monero and Lightning transactions. They wanted someone to crack both, indicating that Lightning transactions, private Lightning transactions, which are a peer-to-peer transaction on a layer above the base layer of Bitcoin, are, according to the IRS, as private as Monero. And so for me, that comes with all the benefits of Bitcoin by transacting on a higher layer, and we can get into that later, and not having to hold Monero, which inflates. There's no supply cap. You'll never know how many there could ever be. And it has a very low hash rate, so it's incredibly exploitable relative to Bitcoin, that is. So now I'd like to get into, you've probably heard about hodlers, and I'm sure if you've been around the internet for any given amount of time, you've heard about hodlers spoken of in a pretty bad light, particularly in libertarian circles, which is interesting. I understand part of the argument, but some of it does not make sense to me. That being said, I think that regardless of your orientation towards Bitcoin, the idea of saving money should be very intriguing to you if you're a libertarian. I mean, that's, you know, we are free marketeers, and saving money for future uncertainty should be a huge part of your toolkit for freedom. You don't want to just spend everything you have. That puts you up the creek really, really quickly in certain situations. So I promote saving in Bitcoin because I believe it's the best savings technology ever invented. And if somebody is willing to take my measly dollars, I will happily pay them in dollars and I will save the excess in Bitcoin. Now, if somebody in the space is someone I respect and they request Bitcoin for a good or a service, I'm happy to pay them. There are plenty of people that would, I'm sure, attest that I have paid them either for maybe a logo or for, I think I paid somebody for a whiskey table in Bitcoin. You know, as long as I'm sending it to somebody who I know respects Bitcoin and is going to keep that payment safe, those Satoshis safe, and not sell them to bankers, I'm more than happy to pay in Bitcoin. Now, I also am going to spend and replace. So if I buy something with Bitcoin, I'm going to just buy more Bitcoin and send it to cold storage. The point of the game theory behind hodling is that what we want to do is we want to raise the price floor of Bitcoin. We want the price to continue to rise. And that is not just because of personal gain. In fact, it's mostly not because of personal gain. It is actually because of the game theory embedded in Bitcoin. We talked about this a little bit earlier with respect to mining. The higher the price of Bitcoin, the more incentive miners have to come online and mine the Bitcoin. And the more mining, the more secure the transactions. And over the course of time, I was speaking of the supply issuance of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is distributed with each block that is confirmed. And we started at 50 Bitcoins that were distributed to the miner with each block that was confirmed. Then to 25, 4 years later, it was cut in half, and then to 12 and a half, and then to 6 1/4. And it will continue to cut in half until eventually it rounds to zero in what is estimated to be the year 2140. Now, the miners are allowed to collect both the block reward, which is now at 6 1/4 Bitcoin for every block they mine, and the transaction fees. So it is very important, particularly early on, when Bitcoin hasn't achieved significant adoption globally. You know, I mean, we're still at probably 0.25% or maybe even less of the world using Bitcoin and actually transacting on Bitcoin. It's really important to raise the price floor so that the block reward, the subsidy that the miners receive, is worth a lot of money so that it can continue to onboard more and more miners and continue to make the network more and more secure. Over time, we need to make sure that the miners are continually rewarded. And you know, in 20 years, when the block reward, or in 4 years, in 6, in 8 years, when the block reward has decreased, we also need to make sure that there is significant amount of fee that they can collect in order to replace that subsidy. So there's another little game there that we'll come back to probably later. But in any case, the hodling is really just to continue to buy up excess Bitcoin, just vacuum it up out of the market and create a supply shortage, which will inherently play out if there's a limited supply and there's more and more demand. You know, in a free market, the price rises. I want to take that concept and I want to apply it to something that happened in the market recently, and that was with GameStop, with Reddit, the subreddit Wall Street Bets. They initiated what they were calling the Infinity Squeeze, the GameStop Infinity Squeeze. And what happened was they saw that people were very short GameStop stocks. And what happens when people are short is that if the trade goes against them, they will, and it goes too far against them, their broker will eventually force them to close their position so they can cover their base capital, and they have to do that by buying the GameStop stock. So that is why you saw this just absolute cascading rip upwards. Is they the GameStop Reddit group, or the Wall Street Bets Reddit group, continued to buy and buy and buy and soak up and vacuum up all of the GameStop stock, and slowly and slowly and slowly pushed that stock up, ratcheting up until it finally hit the point like a fuse, and it hit the powder charge, and it just it liquidated somebody's position, and when they had to close their position, it forces them to buy the stock, which adds more demand. Price goes up, then it cascades into the next guy's short, and the next guy's short, and the next guy's short, and that's exactly what happened with GameStop. I think something, and a lot of Bitcoiners think something is going to happen with Bitcoin in much the same way, and that I would like to call the Bitcoin Infinity Squeeze. And in order to initiate that, we need to keep inching that price up and inching that price up and inching that price up, so that those on the outside, particularly in the macro environment that we're looking at right now, where central banks around the world are just printing their little hearts out, and companies are looking at their cash balance and saying, oh my gosh, they're just inflating everything that we've worked for away. And we're looking at this asset, Bitcoin, that's just increasing and increasing and increasing. My gosh, if we had just converted everything over to Bitcoin 6 months ago, we'd be in such a much better position. We would have doubled our money. And at some point, when it becomes socially acceptable, it's going to kick off, I believe, an infinity squeeze, where you're going to see cascading people who were not in the traditional sense short Bitcoin, but in the real sense, they just didn't have any Bitcoin, and they're realizing they need it. And there's only so much to go around. It is going to initiate this Bitcoin infinity squeeze, which will, of course, bring the mining power along with it. I think at that point, that will be a tipping point where I don't believe any sovereign state will be able to attack Bitcoin, at least from a 51% attack, a 51% mining attack standpoint. So that is why we talk about vacuuming up the supply and hodling and securing your Bitcoin and making sure that you don't sell it back to bankers or people that we don't like. It doesn't ultimately matter who gets Bitcoin, but you know, might as well stick it to the man while we're here. I kind of was digging what the subreddit was doing, so we may as well try and initiate our own little infinity squeeze. So, I think that a good starting point for what the importance of Bitcoin and the importance of converting yourself over to a Bitcoin standard is the Bitcoin Standard, written by Saifedean Ammous. It's fairly popular. I'm sure you've probably heard of it in passing, or seen people tweet about it. Just a really good history of money, and a great incorporation and extension of previous Austrian thinking into the information age, into Bitcoin, the era of Bitcoin. So I think that when you look at something like MicroStrategy, who you may have heard of, who converted their cash balance over to Bitcoin back in August or September in a pretty landmark move, Michael Saylor, the CEO, had read the Bitcoin Standard and kind of saw it illuminated problems that he, in the back of mind, he knew he had, which was he had a huge cash balance because it was a huge company. And it was just melting away like an ice cube out from underneath him. Unless it was deployed doing something, he was losing money. So what he said was, okay, well, I'm just going to convert this huge dollar balance that I have into Bitcoin, and then I don't need to be so hasty about deploying it anywhere because it's just going to naturally appreciate, while it's in our possession. What's interesting is, as Bitcoin progresses and we build out, you heard me speaking of the Lightning Network earlier, and that is probably going to be the location where day-to-day transactions occur, because the base layer is going to be hyper secure, and you don't want to be buying that amount of security for very small purchases because you just don't need it. they will probably see that they have another problem. And that problem is we have another inefficiency in our business. We store our wealth in Bitcoin, but we have to transact in dollars, which is ridiculous. That's a friction point, right? We're dealing with two different currencies. It's a real hassle. Well, as the second layer of Bitcoin gets built out and people are more and more willing to accept Lightning payments and send Lightning payments, perhaps Michael Saylor takes a look at that and says, well, why don't we ditch everything altogether? I think that's a very natural next step. And I think these two steps are steps that a lot of corporations, a lot of companies, a lot of mom and pop shops, and a lot of people, you know, me included, are going to be taking over the next year, 2 years. And I'm very excited for it. So I hope that this episode finds you in at least a curious state where you may be eager to look into this further. So if you're still listening, this is going to be the portion of the episode where I get into more of the nuts and bolts. And this is going to be more of me answering questions that I've received in DMs. And that's people who are understanding the value proposition to Bitcoin, but are a little bit unsure about where to start. So with that, I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come right back. All right, so let's get into the steps to getting into Bitcoin, to actually purchasing your own Bitcoin, sending it back to your own wallet, and keeping that Bitcoin safe. The first thing that I recommend everyone do is to actually run your own node. And that is that you run a version of the Bitcoin software that keeps or at least validates every single transaction that's ever occurred on the network and can positively ID any Bitcoin sent to you as real Bitcoin rather than counterfeit. It is the most reviewed piece of software in Bitcoin because it is the original core client of the software. And it is able to speak to other clients on the network in a mesh, kind of like a distributed network, mesh network fashion. And anything cool that you want to do on top of Bitcoin in a self-custodied way will actually be built on top of this. So it really is kind of the heartbeat of your setup. Not only that, but it comes with a wallet. So theoretically, you only have to download this one piece of software to start validating Bitcoin and storing them. And that's a really powerful thing. So to begin the setup, what I would highly recommend is go to bitcoin.org and download the Bitcoin Core client. What you can do is download that, and I would highly recommend verifying the signature. So I'm going to try to keep it relatively high level. There is a hash of the software that is created, and then using public-private cryptography, you can verify that the software that you downloaded matches the software that the creator originally intended to release. So it kind of eliminates some man-in-the-middle type stuff. So I would recommend doing that, and verifying the signature. And there are instructions on the site. It'll walk you through it. It'll take you 2 minutes, and then firing it up and letting it sync. And it will take, depending on what computer and internet connection you have, I just synced a node in about 2 days. I've seen them take a month. It will depend. Relatively new computers with a decent internet connection, I can't imagine it's going to take more than a few days. But you only have to do it once. And again, this is going to be the core of your whole ensemble. So even if you're not going to use this particular wallet right away, you might as well kick it off and let it start syncing. Now, if you have limited hard drive space, what you can do is you can select an option in the Bitcoin Core client, the software, to prune the ledger. So what the client is going to do as soon as you download it and start to sync and just open it is it will reach out over the Bitcoin network and connect to other core clients, other fully validating nodes on the network, and it will begin to download all of the blocks, the entire ledger of the blockchain going back to the Genesis block in 2009. And it will itself go through and compute and verify each transaction in each block starting from 2009 so that it knows that every single thing is legit up until the current block. And that way, if somebody sends you something, it can be traced back to its rightful origin as a block subsidy reward in some block along the way, which is the only way that you can create a legitimate Bitcoin. If you don't want to take a bunch of hardware or a hard drive space, you can select to prune the node. So right now the entire ledger I think is 300 gigabytes, 350 gigabytes, something like that, which is kind of a lot, but I have a terabyte hard drive. And you know, it just is what it is. It takes that hard drive and that's fine. But if you want to run it on a computer with a smaller hard drive, you can optionally select to prune it to, you know, say two gigabytes or 5 gigabytes or something like that. Whatever you want. And it will still go through and validate all the blocks going back to 2009, but it will begin to throw out all of that data after it is validated and checked and made sure that it was correct up until the most recent 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 gigabytes or whatever it is you would select. And that's just about as good as running a full archival, meaning we have the full ledger locally, archival node, but it will limit some of the cool things that you can do down the road. Like for instance, running a local block explorer that you don't have to rely on the internet or someone else's node to use. But there's nothing wrong with running a prune node. For instance, I have one running right now. I have a full archival node, but I also have a prune node on one computer where I receive Bitcoin occasionally, and that's fine. It operates just the same way, and it verifies that all incoming Bitcoin is legitimate, and it also enforces consensus rules on the network. And I also allow incoming connections on it, so other people with light wallets, you know, that don't have the entire chain can connect to as well. So there's nothing wrong with running a pruned node, particularly if the other option is not running a node at all. So you can download that, let it sync. I don't believe that you can receive Bitcoin to that wallet until it is fully synced. So in the meantime, you could use a software wallet on your desktop. Something that I use is called Wasabi Wallet. Again, you just download it. Go through the steps of creating wallet. It'll walk you through. You'll have to write down your seed words. I believe 12 or 24 seed words. Keep those safe. As long as you have those words, you can recover any funds that are associated with that wallet at any time. And then you can receive them there. And eventually, when your Bitcoin Core wallet syncs fully, as long as your Wasabi wallet is on the same computer, it will actually connect to that Bitcoin Core node automatically. And then it will, you know, verify that the coins are real. So really what you could do is just download Bitcoin Core, let it sync in the background. You could even prune it to 2 or 3 or 4 gigabytes, so it's not taking up a whole lot of space. Then download Wasabi, create a new wallet, receive any new Bitcoins, and eventually in a week or something like that, it'll automatically all verify for you. So it's may sound like a lot, but it really isn't all that bad. You could also do this on your phone. I really, really like Blue Wallet for the phone. It's worked great for me. Samurai, some people really like Samurai. That's another really good wallet on the phone. You know, as far as I've seen, one thing that I would like to point out, when we venture away from the actual Bitcoin Core client, you kind of need to keep your ear to the tracks on any disruptions or any bad actors or anything like that. You know, I say that Wasabi Wallet is good today. It may not be tomorrow. That's just kind of the nature of the space. And it could be that they either become bad actors, or it could be that they're infiltrated, or it could be that, you know, they have an error in their code or something like that. So Bitcoin Core is theoretically the most secure, or at least the most reviewed piece of software out there. And if it fails, the whole thing fails. So, you know, it's far more trustworthy than other software, I would say. All of that said, at some point, you're going to want to store your Bitcoin in what's called a cold wallet, or something where your private keys and the private keys secure the Bitcoin that are bound to all your public addresses. Your private key is not connected to the internet. And hardware wallets are one way of achieving this. Now, they have their own security model, and you kind of need to understand the limitations and how to use them. And they're, you know, fairly secure for, you know, medium amounts or you know, something like that. Or they can be used as part of an ensemble. And I'll get into that in a second. So at this point, you've downloaded Bitcoin Core. It's syncing in the background. You've downloaded Wasabi Wallet. You've created a new wallet, written down your seed words, put them in a safe place, and now you're ready to go out and purchase Bitcoin, which you cannot do in the wallet. So what you do is you go out and you can either go to one that I use that I know at some point is going to become a bad actor is Cash App. It's just easy. I'm already registered with it. And so far they have not limited my ability to withdraw away from Cash App. And that's something that you really need to pay attention to, because it's very important that wherever you buy, whatever exchange that you go out and buy from allows you to withdraw your Bitcoins from that exchange into a wallet where you own the keys. There's a saying that not your keys, not your Bitcoins. And it's very true. They learned that in Mt. Gox back in 13 or 14. If one of these exchanges decides that they don't want to give you your Bitcoin, technically there's not a whole lot you can do. Maybe the government will come in and help you out, but there's really, you know, there's not a whole lot that you can do about it. So I would suggest being very paranoid about all exchanges, basically. And then eventually we will probably be forced to use more decentralized exchanges and something like it's called BISC, BISQ, which is a decentralized exchange, but you need to run a full node, and I believe it might need to be a full archival node locally in order to use BISC. So one more example of why you should just download Bitcoin Core and let it sync. So Cash App is okay for quick buys. One thing I would highly recommend, and I'm going to put it in the show notes page, is Swan Bitcoin. And they offer dollar cost average. So I'm set up where it just buys automatically on my paychecks, you know, first and 15th type deal. And it will automatically withdraw to my private wallet. So it buys. And then withdraws to my private wallet. And most of the time, I don't even really think about it. I just check my wallet and I'm like, oh, wow, I've got more Bitcoin here. So I'll put a link to that. I highly recommend Swan. And that's most of what I use. And actually, Swan has recently instituted a quote-unquote smash buy, or like a bulk buy, if you want to buy. You know, Cash App is one of those things where it's if you wake up and, oh my gosh, Bitcoin just crashed $3,000. I got to grab some while it's cheap. That's basically when I use Cash App. So with Swan's new smash buy, it probably renders Cash App obsolete. But in any case, I still use it. So I alluded to this earlier, but there are potentially incoming regulatory issues. They've been threatening this for a little while, but I believe that the U.S. will at some point illegalize or disallow exchanges from giving their users the ability to withdraw the Bitcoin that they've purchased to a private wallet, to the wallet that you set up on your desktop. That's a huge problem, right? Because the entire point of Bitcoin is having it in your own wallet where you can send Bitcoin anywhere in the world without having to ask permission. If you have your Bitcoin on an exchange and you tell the exchange, hey, I want to send it here, well, it's kind of up to them. They can say no, right? Well, that's not very sovereign. That's not very Bitcoin. We don't like asking permission. We are free individuals and we can send our money where we like. So that's something to just keep your eye on, particularly in the U.S. I assume it will happen at some point. I thought it was going to happen in December. Looks like it eased off, but definitely at some point. So something that I've been harping on is if you are going to, say, buy a lot of Bitcoin, maybe buy it in smaller increments and buy, you know, let's just say you were going to buy a Bitcoin, maybe buy a tenth of a Bitcoin, send it to your private wallet, wait for it to confirm. Buy another tenth of a Bitcoin, send it to your wallet, wait for it to confirm. Buy another tenth. And the reason would be because what if they disallow withdrawals and you didn't realize it or something like that, and you go buy a full Bitcoin and they say, no, you can't move it from the exchange. You're kind of up the creek. That's as good as just fun bucks at that point. I mean, it's only as good as their honor, and they don't have any. So just be careful. Be careful about it. Now, let's talk about privacy and some best practices. So the first and foremost is that whenever you are receiving Bitcoin, so whenever you're withdrawing from the exchange into your private wallet, you always want to use a new address. And Wasabi essentially forces you to do this. And I tend to label them. So I will go into receive. I'll enter in information, just say February 4th, Cash App, and then hit receive. And it will generate a QR code and a public address. So you can either go. So then you can go to Cash App and you can either say send and scan that QR code, or you can paste in the public address and send it there, and it'll show up in your Wasabi wallet. Wasabi has integrated a coin mixer. And there's plenty of coin mixers in the space. There's CoinMarket, Samurai has a coin mixer. But what these do is basically wash your money. And it's like everybody throws their Bitcoins in the washing machine, it spins, and then it spits them out, and it tries to break deterministic links between you and your Bitcoin. When you buy Bitcoin from an exchange, that exchange has probably initiated KYC AML stuff on you. So they have your name, address, picture, state ID, etc. And they have sent you Bitcoin to an address that you have given them. And so if that Bitcoin doesn't move, they know it's yours and they know it's there. And if they know it's there, well, probably the government knows it's there. And maybe other people know it's there. What if they get hacked, or what if they are generous with sharing their information? We don't know. So I always recommend mixing your coins to try to break deterministic links. There's a lot to read there to fully understand exactly what you're getting. But like I said, Wasabi has a mixer integrated. I believe it's okay enough. I need to read up more on that. But CoinMarket is another option. And again, you need to run a node locally for CoinMarket, but it's an option. You can actually make money by offering liquidity on CoinMarket. I think that's probably good as a starter. Download Bitcoin Core, let it sink. In the meantime, download a wallet. And then ideally you want the wallet to connect to Bitcoin Core whenever it syncs. But in the meantime, you can buy Bitcoin and send it to your wallet. It's really not terribly complex, and you'll get used to it really quick, and you will begin to favor it over legacy banking. Trust me, it's just so much simpler, particularly now, especially with like the advent of like QR codes and things like that. It just makes things so easy and so quick. And just a fantastic experience all in all. But if that isn't enough for you, there are some really cool other products in the space, and people have used or have started to combine a lot of the very cool Bitcoin products, the open source products in the space onto, for instance, I run and it's called Umbrel, and they're at getumbrel.com, UMBREL, like umbrella. And it's a software that's an all-in-one software that downloads Bitcoin and Lightning, runs a Lightning node, and you can have BTC Pay Server on it. You can have a number of other things on there, and it's no muss, no fuss, and it just syncs a Bitcoin node, and then you can connect all of your other wallets to it. It's beautiful. It's amazing. Raspi Blitz is another product like that. There are a number of them. I think Casa has one. I just started screwing around with them because I used to just run Bitcoin Core on an old Linux computer and just that be that. But these things are pretty cool. I wouldn't keep a huge amount on them, but you can use the node that they sync on a more secure setup. That's more secure setup. I would highly recommend as you get more Bitcoin to look into a multi-signature arrangement. And that is that I was talking about your private keys. Well, Bitcoin relies on public-private key cryptography, where your private key allows you to send any Bitcoin that's associated with that private key. In a multi-signature arrangement, you can set it up in any number of keys of any number of other keys are required to send the Bitcoin. So you could set up a two of two, where you need two keys of two existing keys to send a particular Bitcoin. You could set it up as a two of three, a two of four, a three of five, a four of seven. You can set it up in all kinds of creative arrangements, but it removes single points of failure. So if you set up a two of three, and let's say you have one at your house, let's say you have one in a bank deposit or a safety deposit box in a bank, and one at your brother's house or something like that, then you just if a house burns down or if you lose a key, you're not up the creek. You've got a you've got an out, and it also prevents the proverbial $5 wrench attack, someone attacking you physically at home. I mean, it doesn't necessarily prevent them. They still could, but they just won't come away with anything because they'll only get one key. So to learn a little bit more about that, I talked about the Bitcoin Standard. I think that's a great starting book to understand the background of money and why Bitcoin's important. Understanding the technical portions of Bitcoin, if you're so inclined. The first book that really clicked for me was Mastering Bitcoin. It's by Andreas Antonopoulos. He's kind of got egg on his face in the space recently. Not even all that recently. So you'll hear a lot of people kind of crap on him, and a lot of it's deserved. But at the end of the day, information is information. Anything that helps you learn, I think, is valuable. His book helped me a lot early on. Somebody wrote a book called Grokking Bitcoin. I've read about half of it. I think it's just a different writing style and a learning style. I didn't jive with it. I thought he used way too many metaphors. And so I found myself trying to track both the actual like Bitcoin storyline and the metaphor storyline. But for some people swear by it. So it is a good book. It just wasn't really for me. So that's another one. There's plenty of resources in the space. For security, I would highly recommend going to Matt Odell. I think it's Matt_Odell, and he's one half of Tales from the Crypt podcast, and I highly recommend listening to that as well. There's plenty of resources in the space now, which is great. You just have to separate noise from signal, and particularly you have to try not to get scammed. And so that's probably the most difficult part. But keep in mind, this stuff isn't, it's different, but it's not all that difficult. So don't have it, intimidate you. So with that, I think I've given a pretty decent overview of the why of Bitcoin, the how of Bitcoin, and the getting started, more or less structured around responses to questions that I've been receiving over and over again. So I have a place to point you guys, and a place that you can come back to and re-listen if you get a little bit lost. I have a couple closing words, and I'll start with the fact that people say Bitcoin is not a get rich quick scheme, and it definitely is not. But you can greatly improve your financial lot in life, I think, with Bitcoin. And again, a lot of this comes down to, Bitcoin could fail. It absolutely could. I'm becoming more and more convinced with each passing day and with each confirmed block that it's got a really decent shot at not failing. And so I think that you'll find as you progress in your knowledge of how Bitcoin works and the real risks involved in it, and understanding how to manage those risks and understanding what risks just aren't manageable, like state attacks and things like that, you will become more comfortable, or possibly less comfortable, allocating more and more of your incoming cash to Bitcoin as savings. But In the beginning, I would highly recommend not investing any more than you're willing to lose. I mean, that's just common sense financial advice. But I am not a financial advisor. I would think about this more as a workout regime, than like a lifestyle change, than a buy once, cry once, like I'm just going to try and get rich real quick here type deal. I would say I highly recommend the dollar cost averaging and just kind of forgetting about Bitcoin. Just socking it away. And then maybe 6 months from now, looking in the mirror and saying, oh man, I've grown some muscles. I'm looking a lot better than I was 6 months ago. This is really nice. You know, I think that's a much better way to look at it. And particularly going into a bull market, bull markets are really, really difficult, in the beginning. And I wish somebody had told me this in the, last bull market. You really learn a lot more during a bear market, and it's because you have the peace and the calm to learn, and you're not looking at charts, and you're not looking at the Bitcoin number go bananas, and you're not looking at a million scammers, in the space, you know, onboarding and telling you this and telling you that. But you know, just keep your head and keep calm, as there's a saying, stay humble, stack sats. And I think that's, you're just going to be happier if you do that than try to get fancy with it. Going back to the GameStop infinity squeeze and adapting that to the Bitcoin infinity squeeze, I think what you saw in the aftermath of the GameStop infinity squeeze was the problems that come about with, a hostile environment. And you saw immediately where there was information and disinformation and misinformation about trying to initiate a short squeeze in silver. And what's looking more and more apparent is that there were agents provocateur inserted and of some variety. I don't know exactly, but it's very clear that there were people trying to muddy the waters. Were they government? Were they hedge fund? Who cares? There were people trying to muddy the waters. And the GameStop squeeze that Monday or Tuesday or whenever it happened worked swimmingly. But you always have to remember that it's just difficult to group a fragmented public for a kind of collective action, and you get splintered by these Cointel Pro tactics really quickly. And that is why I think that the Bitcoin infinity squeeze is so important, and it's so important for people to find sooner rather than later. Because Bitcoin has properties that inherently make it a much better opportunity for an infinity squeeze, because you can verify the Bitcoin that you get. You can verify the total supply of Bitcoin. And there is always truth in the ledger, and proof of work wins. So you don't have to rely on a bunch of information outside of what you can see on your own node. So I think that's something to think about. The Bitcoin infinity squeeze is the true squeeze. It's the true, it's far less impervious to Cointel Pro type stuff. One last thing. And this is kind of a plea, to libertarians, with respect to Bitcoin, as a strategy for reducing the state or attacking the state. And I think that there historically through the, you know, for the last 50 years or 100 years, whatever you want to call it, let's just say 50 years roughly to the beginning of, let's just say, the Libertarian Party and the era of the ending of the closing of the gold window and that, libertarians have seemed to move from one strategy to another strategy to another strategy, then back to the first strategy, then over to the third strategy, and back to the second strategy in terms of reducing the state. And none of them have really worked. And I don't think that any of them will work. But more importantly, there has been no market signal against any one particular strategy, whether it be, non-agorism or non-Bitcoin agorism, like, you know, homesteading or things like that, or political action, or, you know, like violent action or any of these different strategies, none of them have worked. And that creates a situation where the opportunity cost of being wrong is zero. Nobody ever has to pay any price for being wrong on their particular strategy. Nobody ever has, because nobody has ever been right. And I think that Bitcoin, that that Bitcoin and pushing for a Bitcoin standard has the potential to actually work. I know none of the others are going to work because we've tried them over and over and over again. This one might not work, but I don't know. The roadmap appears to be there. There are hazards along the way, but it certainly looks like there is a reasonable shot that it could work at removing money from state. And when you remove money from state, that's 90% of the battle. There's a reason that all of us back in 2008 and 2012 were saying, end the Fed, go back on a gold standard. Because it would work. It's a massive curtailing on state power. In the era of Bitcoin, I think it would serve to nearly eliminate it. It would be so difficult to institute yearly theft on a Bitcoin standard over time when compared to anything else, even gold. You know, obviously gold, there was always taxes under gold standards anyway. So I think that we have a unique opportunity, but I also think that there's unique hazards because for the first time, libertarians or particular groups of libertarians could pay a high price for being wrong. And not just a price like, a egg on your face price, but a high financial price. You know, the opportunity cost, if I look back at the opportunity cost for me not going whole hog into Bitcoin from the day that I bought, the opportunity cost is massive. I mean, it's just massive. I have paid out the ears in opportunity costs because I did not go whole hog from day one. That's not to say go whole hog from day one for you. I think you should just understand the network, but I would just say if you are in any position to be in a leadership role or in an influencer role or in a or even just a regular libertarian, try to at least understand the playbook, the Bitcoin playbook. And if you still disagree with it, fine. But it could be that this works and the opportunity cost for you and anyone who you have influenced otherwise could be incredibly high. And I think that's something to think about. Now, conversely, to bounce that argument back at me, the opportunity cost for being wrong if Bitcoin does fail for me is going to be huge. I mean, it's going to be massive. And I hope that I don't lead anyone else astray into that, which is why I do emphasize that everybody does do your reading and understand what the risks are because they are there. This is not a silver bullet necessarily, although I tend to think it is, but there are risks and there are pitfalls and there are ways that that this could fail. So please turn your brain on and really take a look at this as a strategy, not only for your betterment, but for ours as a liberty seeking community. And with that, I don't think I have a whole lot else, and I don't want to make this episode so long that people don't want to listen to it. So I'm going to post a lot of resources in the show notes page, including the Swan Bitcoin link for the dollar cost averaging. It's what I use. It's what I recommend. And again, as the caveat is with everything outside of Bitcoin Core, I recommend it today, February 4th, 2021. Who knows what the future holds? Keep your ears to the track, and always withdraw as soon as you possibly can after purchase so that you don't have to rely on somebody else. I will note that I signed up as a referral partner for Swan, you will see a cool car camp at landing page, and depending on I think you will get, like, if you sign up, I think you get like $5 or $10 worth of Bitcoin, and there is, depending on what you do with it, there's some kickback for me, I believe, as well. So hey, if you feel like you want to do that, cool, and if not, that's cool too. So with that, until next month, esquite it.